Mark. We're back here for another one of my favorite I'm So Confused podcasts. But this time, I'm even more confused than usual, I think.
We were talking beforehand, and we started with less confusion and quickly wound up with more confusion. And so now I'm entirely in your boat, and I'm super confused as well. So this will be maybe frustrating for our listener, but maybe not. We'll see.
Do you think we'll get lots of critical emails? Like, even if we say we're confused, we're not sure.
People seem to think that we're their lawyers sometime, and that we have some obligation to do like lots of due diligence before speaking. And I don't know what to say to that, other than that we're not.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, but I have to. Okay, so all of you with your nasty emails ready, we do love hearing from you. It's nicer when your emails have a nicer tone to them. But let me just stay at the start. We're very confused. I thought this morning that I was on solid ground, and then I talked to Mark, and he has persuaded me that the ground is very, very quick sandy underneath me. So today we're going to talk about the Ukrainergo.
The confusion starts at the very beginning with the pronunciation of the name of this entity. So
it's a Ukrainian bond with a sovereign guarantee. And
the Ukrainian energy company.
Yeah. And we really like talking about sovereign guaranteed bonds because their drafting and contract terms are often quite dodgy and have things in them that best we can tell, unless these are lawyers intending to torment ordinary people, just don't work. At least don't work in the way in which we thought they would work. And this is potentially another one of those examples. Either it's badly drafted, I think the language in it is not a model of clarity, or we just haven't done enough diligence in order to understand it. But I'm going to start by, we talked a little bit about this bond earlier in our podcast with Chris, but that's what got us to dig a little deeper. So some weeks ago, there was a press release about how Cleary Gottlieb was representing a bondholder group in this Ukrainergo bond, and they wanted to separate their negotiations from the rest of the Ukrainian sovereign bondholders. And that's well and good. You may want a lot of things. You may not get a lot of things that you want. But the market reacted quite significantly to this. Prices went up almost 33%. And that's what got us curious as to why the hell would an announcement like this cause the price to go up so much? And the fact that these bonds had shiny new aggregated collective action clauses that seemed to suggest that they would be aggregated with all of Ukraine's other sovereign bonds or externally denominated other sovereign bonds made the puzzle even more salient because, you know, why would the other bondholders or the country allow this bond to escape? So that made us wonder whether there's something in the documentation that these super smart lawyers for some hedge funds have figured out that will protect them. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Does that sound about right, Mark?
It does sound about right. Yeah. And I think maybe we're going to divide this up into the legal question of whether the holders of the Ukrainergo bond can be given the same treatment as the holders of the sovereign bond, notwithstanding the guarantee. And then separately, the kind of practical question of whether, even if they can be forced to accept the same terms, whether they might have some reason to think that they're going to get a better deal one way or the other. And maybe to start, it might be useful, Mitu, to identify the provision that started me down this path and that got me confused, which was a provision in the guarantee that says, and it's grammatically, it's just written sort of strangely, but leaving out some of the parts that are confusing, what it basically says is that the obligations of the guarantor to, you know, guarantee seemingly the full amount that's due are unconditional and are unaffected even by a modification of the guaranteed notes. And so I guess one of the questions...
You want to read the portion? It's unconditional and it's on the front page and irrevocable?
Yeah, unconditional and irrevocable. And although it's not really because you can modify the guarantee, it's but in any event, the part that I'm looking at says that the obligations of the guarantor under this guarantee shall be unconditional and shall not be affected by, and then it lists a bunch of things that are not going to affect the guarantee and the obligations of the guarantor. And one of those things that won't affect the guarantor's obligation is any amendment or modification of any of the provisions of the notes or the deed of covenant, subject to the guarantor having provided its prior written approval of such amendment or modification. And that subject to proviso kind of confuses me grammatically, but I'm most focused on the part that came before it, which basically says an amendment or modification of the notes doesn't have any effect on the guarantor's obligations. So I guess the starting question for me is like, if it were possible to cram down new economic terms on the holders of this Ukrnergo bond, does that mean the sovereign's guarantee is still for the full amount?
I don't know the language. So if the language had said there is a guarantee except if the bond's terms are modified via collective action clause, then I think it would be pretty clear that you have a guarantee for the full amount, except if the bond's terms are modified. And then maybe you'd have a guarantee for the modified amounts. But this is not worded that way. This seems to say you have an unconditional and irrevocable guarantee that cannot be modified. And then it has this wording subject to the guarantor agreeing to a modification.
Yeah, it's weird. And it also doesn't, some guarantees we've seen have listed the amounts guaranteed. So then it's pretty clear that those are the amounts that the, especially if the guarantee is written so that the guarantor has in effect like a principal obligation rather than just the obligation of a surety, it kind of fixes the amount the guarantor is on the hook for. And this bond doesn't have that. So right from the start, I guess, I'm a little confused about what the guarantor's obligations are if the payment amount is modified. So maybe we can just kind of bracket that and set it aside, because I don't know that I have the ability to say anything more coherent to
so
clarify.
Can I run one? So one thing I heard when I have asked around, because when I am confused, I have no hesitation asking people who are much smarter than me, which is almost everybody who does work on this. And one answer I got was, oh, you know, yes, the language is not very clear, but if you really understood the law of surety, I guess there's a law of surety, then you would understand that there is this background law of guarantees, I guess surety is all guarantees, that says that the guarantee disappears if you do anything to change it. A guarantor is completely off the hook. And so this language is there to make it clear that the guarantee doesn't disappear, but you're allowed to change the terms. Now, at the next step, I imagine we're going to get to the collective action clause modification. But at first, when this person who's super smart and capable and knows everything told me this, I said, oh, you know, as is my wont, I nodded my head and said, oh, yes, that's great. Now I understand everything. And then when I went back and looked at it, now I understand nothing. I still don't understand this subject to language, like subject. Okay.
Yeah, that, so I hate to semantic.
That doesn't add clarity for you either.
I find it very confusing. It's not clear which direction it cuts. Like, does the the subject to part proviso is to me just almost nonsensical. I'm sure I am missing something obvious. It just is written in a very awkward way for me.
Well, but it does, if you're holding the bond and it has the guarantee and you're like, okay, this is not clear at all that you can remove the guarantee, you can, so fine, change the bond's terms completely. My original terms are guaranteed irrevocably and unconditionally, and so you got to pay me. Fine, the company doesn't, you've changed the terms, but I can still go against the guarantor for the full terms. Maybe you would construct some kind of argument. Confusion in the language means that it's good for the creditors claiming that.
Usually, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So maybe that's one of the things. But the last time when we were talking to Chris Spink, we talked about how we were puzzled that these creditors thought they would get a better deal because of the aggregation provisions that seemed to almost require, although not necessarily, this bond to be aggregated with all the other plain vanilla Ukrainian sovereign bonds. And I don't know the exact numbers, but let's say there's 24 billion or so of other Ukrainian sovereign bonds, and this bond is less than a billion, something like 850 million. So you can, if the other bonds want, they can easily squeeze this one into a single limbed aggregated boat. No problem.
I think that that's right. The one, they all seem to be, the defined term is debt securities capable of aggregation. And as long as your bond is a debt security capable of aggregation, it can be aggregated with other such bonds. And I think the definition says it, you're a debt security capable of aggregation with the sovereign's bonds if you have a collective action clause that's, I forget the language, but the
same or substantially.
The only difference, right, is that at least the only difference I've noticed is that the reserved matter list in the guaranteed bond lists the guarantee as a reserved matter. So I guess in principle, you could make the argument that that makes it not substantially similar to the sovereign's bonds, but that strikes me as a kind of thin argument, right?
Yeah, because substantially similar is
pretty damn similar.
Yeah, these are pretty damn similar. They're like 99% of the wording is identical. But again, so now here again, you have an argument that the creditors could make that saying, you know, we're not substantially similar because we have a guarantee. I think that one, they're on weaker ground. It looks pretty substantially similar. And the intent of the parties, I think it would not be hard for a judge to say the intent of the parties was for this bond to be aggregated with all the other sovereign bonds. But the question then is, if you are aggregating with all the other sovereign bonds, and let's say based on the IMF's debt sustainability analysis, the IMF has recommended that everybody get a 40% haircut. And so can Ukraine give these bonds, or would it have to basically in a aggregated vote, give them the same 60 cents on the dollar new bond or a modified old bond as everybody else.
Well, I guess it doesn't, you never have to, well, contractually, you never have to include any particular bond in the
aggregate. No, but let's say if you're including them.
Yeah. And then you have to give them, if you're going to hold one vote across the whole debt stock, which presumably you would want to do if holders of this bond are insisting on separate treatment, then you can hold that single limb vote as long as you give them all uniformly applicable treatment, which means you've got to invite them to exchange, convert, or substitute their debt securities on the same terms for the same new instrument or instruments or consideration. Or you can give them an identical menu of instruments or consideration. So as long as you're giving everyone the same choice, as I read it, you can hold them all, you can put them all in one pool to vote.
But let me re-emphasize the part that I think is super important here. Everybody has to be given the same choice of instruments.
Yes, and so, or the same.
So does that mean everybody has to get the same treatment?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much there, as you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of actual definitive.
Like everybody gets a 20-year, yeah.
If you give them 60% of what they're, if you give them a 60 cents on the dollar haircut, let's say hypothetically, and everybody gets a 60%, a 40% reduction in the face value of their bond, just hypothetically, and then it seems to me that that's uniform treatment. You're giving them the same consideration. Right.
The guarantee would just be,
well,
now
this is
would
in,
you pay 60% of the old amount.
This is why it's linked, right? If the guarantor has to pay the old amount, then the guarantor, this doesn't really help you that much. It doesn't really help the restructurer that much. But if the guarantor is only on the hook for what the issuer has to pay, and you reduce the issuer's payment obligation by 40%, then it solves both of your problems. But I think leaving the guarantee aside for now, I think there's nothing prevents you from saying everyone takes a 40% haircut. That's your choice, right?
But would the guarantee would still be there?
Yes, the guarantee, that would leave the guarantee in place.
And it would, and would it still be there for 100 cents or would it be there only for 60 cents?
That goes back to the very first question that we asked, is it depends on whether the guarantee is read that unconditional, irrevocable language, unaffected by an underlying modification language, whether you read that to imply that the guarantor is promising irrevocably to pay the full amount of the unmodified bonds, or whether it's simply promising to pay whatever amount is due under the bonds, which would be lower after the modification. And the substantive language of the guarantor, of the obligation itself, is to, hold on, to, for due and punctual payments of all amounts payable by the issuer on or in respect of the notes. And so, if the issuer's payment obligation has gone down, I think the argument there is that so have the guarantors. But yes, it is all a very confusing mess to me.
Goodness, when they drafted it, surely they would have worked through all of these iterations. And
I think maybe the point is that the drafters understand the underlying norms and expectations, and probably also the law of guarantees better than I do, at least. And so there are a bunch of things that they are taking for granted that I, as an ignoramus, am not aware of. And so probably it seems confusing to me and is less confusing to them. But then the question is, like, how confusing is it going to seem to a judge?
If, yeah, the
if, is the
who
judge
are
more
reading
like me, or is the judge more like the drafter?
Yes. And then the investors, they're like, I mean, we did go to law school. This is just still gibberish. And then, I mean, these poor investors, many of them were not subjected to many years of law school. They're reading it and like, what the hell is it? Is this guaranteed or is it not guaranteed? And
Me too. I don't want to take, I know we want to talk about a bunch of things, and I don't
oh,
want
yes,
to,
sorry.
it's already so confusing that I don't want to confuse us more, but is it worth asking whether it is possible to remove or modify the guarantee? Let's say remove. We know you can modify the guarantee, but it seems to require a super majority of the guaranteed bond to do. I'm not sure. One can modify the guarantee in a vote that is aggregated with the sovereign bond holders, but
So
maybe you can strip the guarantee?
can we just let me try to make this question clear. So
Please.
in the guaranteed bond, in the Ukrnergo guaranteed bond, it says that the guarantee is a reserved matter, or modifying the guarantee is a reserved matter. So that means that one bond, the creditors in that bond could modify their guarantee, right? With the permission of the issuer.
That's
Not
right.
on their own, they can't unilaterally do it, but with the permission of the issuer.
Correct.
So then the question is this, well, but this thing has aggregated collective action clauses. So can all the other bonds vote to remove all guarantees in all of their bonds?
Even though they don't have any
Even though
guarantee.
they don't have any, and under the uniformly applicable standard, which is that all you have to have is that you make the same offer to everybody. So everybody gets offered an unguaranteed bond, a new unguaranteed bond that pays 60 cents on the dollar. Isn't that making everybody a uniformly applicable offer?
Yeah, I think the so there's to my mind, there's two questions here, right? So if there's an exchange offer, nobody has to participate in it, right? So with a caveat maybe that I'll leave later. So if you're imagining some people are left holding the current guaranteed bond, you can't, I don't think, make them take another, again, subject to the this caveat that I'll get to. But like, so the question is whether you could modify their bond to remove the guarantee. And I find that, I don't know, I'm a little skeptical that one could, in an aggregated vote where 90% of the voters have unguaranteed bonds, that you could vote to modify a bond so as to remove guarantees that are not there for most of them. That kind of explodes my brain. What I think you would need to do this in a way that forced people to accept a new bond, same bond offered to everyone, probably a sovereign bond at 60% face value or something like that. But you need a mechanism, I think, I'm guessing, to force holders of the guaranteed bond to swap it for a new unguaranteed bond. And I think you could figure out a way to do that, but I'm not sure you could do it by modifying the bonds that they currently hold. Does that make sense? Like, it doesn't
Yes.
make sense,
Is
but
it
you,
kind
I
of
don't,
some,
it's
sorry.
confusing to, I don't think you can modify the guaranteed bond in an aggregated vote so as to strip the guarantee, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. This is confused. So if it's not in my bond as a reserved matter, and I don't have a guarantee, can I vote to remove somebody else's guarantee? That just seems wrong.
I'm not modifying my bond when I do that because my
Yeah,
bond
I'm
doesn't
voting to
guarantee.
modify your
Yeah.
bond, but they're supposed to have this aggregated voting mechanism, and it is a reserved matter that you can modify in that one guaranteed bond. Could you modify all of the bonds to have some kind of redemption provision, like a forced redemption or something like
Yeah,
doing
this is what we
do
were
something
talking
like
about a
that?
little bit beforehand, right? And if I, I should know more about this than I do, but my recollection is that that's how some of the debt for nature deals have been done when they've been, you know, done in connection with a buyback, like in Belize. My recollection was that the tendering bondholders also voted to modify the bonds they were tendering so that they could be redeemed by the issuer on basically the same terms, although the, you know, the non-tendering people got screwed a little bit. So I think maybe you could use a mechanism like that if what your goal here is at the end of the day to leave everyone holding a new, presumably sovereign bond without a guarantee. My guess is that you could get there, and you could get there by an aggregated vote, maybe by voting to modify the bonds in the way you're talking about. You modify them so that they can be redeemed and exchanged for a new bond over the holder's objection. But maybe
just the market would, you know, maybe they would maybe everybody would take the view is that if you have a guarantee with an aggregated collective action clause, and just the rest of the creditors can just keep reducing the amount of money you're owed. Like if we take the view that they could reduce the guarantee as well, which is not at all clear, then the guarantee is kind of worthless, right? Every time the country has to do a restructuring, it just crams down a vote on you that reduces the amount.
Yeah, but there's an easy solution to this, right? You just redefine the voting pool, right? You write this so that it can't be aggregated with unguaranteed bonds. Like that's, you know, I know people don't like to modify these instruments, but like that is not an especially complicated change to build in.
I think we have conclusively established, and nobody could dispute this, so don't send us the nasty emails. We have conclusively established that we are very confused.
Yes.
So, you know, don't be sending us emails that say you guys are idiots because you don't understand that you actually got it all right.
Yeah, why don't you talk about this instead?
That's not possible. So can I now throw out what I've been hearing, which is not any of what we've talked about?
Yeah.
So we read the documents and get very confused and think, oh, the investors' lawyers, they must have read this carefully too, because they're Uber lawyers, not for the Uber company, but like, you know, super good lawyers. And they must have said, oh, we can drive a truck through this loophole in this confusing language. And better still, if they were the ones who drafted the confusing language, they know where all the potholes are. But so because I'm utterly confused, I reached out to some folks who actually buy and sell these. Now, with the caveat that they may have been spinning me, and some of them did tell me, they're like, look, I hold some of these bonds, so take whatever I say with a grain of salt. Here's the story they told me. They started out by saying, you have to understand NAFTA and the railways. And I'm like, I guess I was utterly confused. I'm like, what's NAFTA? I guess it's NAFTA gas. And what about the railways? Like, why do I care about the Ukrainian railways? So apparently there are some bonds out there for the Ukrainian railways. And there's some for NAFTA gas. So NAFTA gas, at the time of the last restructuring, they were separated at least for one or two bonds, and they got paid extra because the company had extra cash and had promised to pay. So I thought that was just whatever happened. Either somebody had a side deal, or maybe the company really was flush with cash. But the railway bond is apparently trading at a significant premium to Ukraine's sovereign bonds, which is so bizarre. Given that, I mean, mostly I remember the Greek railway bonds, which are just utter, like a railway that had just utter crap, had no money, and the state was supporting it. So how is, you don't expect the railway bond to be trading at a premium. And maybe Ukraine runs its railways really beautifully, and they just make so much
Well,
profit.
they're kind of busy. The railways are presumably kind of busy right now, so they might actually be on pretty secure financial footing.
Maybe that's a lot of people running away or something like that, or like taking troops into Russian territory to fight the Russians or something like that.
Right.
Anyway, but the story that I heard was these bonds are perceived to have the potential to escape a restructuring, particularly a restructuring as brutal as the one that the IMF's DSA is likely to require. And so they're going to get paid more because Ukraine's just going to pay them more. Whereas any bond that is stuck in the IMF's DSA category, which are beloved Ukrainergo bond, and I think there's a road bond too, are in there, those will be brutally haircut. So
Now
that's
they're in because they're guaranteed, right?
they're in because they're guaranteed, and so the IMF noticed them.
So it's
And
weird because normally you would think the guaranteed bond would be safer, and here you're positing that it's not safer.
yes, and it's not safer because the IMF noticed it and put it in the DSA. And so therefore now terrible things are going to happen to you. And
But
so
once the IMF notices you, is the idea that there's some mechanism for causing the IMF to unnotice you?
yes, this is the theory. The theory is that, look, the IMF and the country will be super happy if we somehow strip the guarantee from ourselves. So we negotiated for a state guarantee, but now we're just going to go out there and jump into the icy cold waters naked, because we don't want the protection. The protection's actually hurting us. And once we remove the guarantee, we'll just become like the railways and we'll be paid extra because now the IMF won't care about us. And in fact, the
But don't
IMF
you
will be
need like,
happy.
don't you need certainly the issuer and either explicitly or implicitly Ukraine's consent for this? And
You
I
do.
guess I'm not sure I understand the logic, although.
So somehow they're going to persuade Ukraine. Somehow Ukraine's going to be happier too, because it's even though you're going to end up paying the bond from Ukrainian money, you're going to pay it much more. Ukraine's going to be happy because it's taken off the sovereign balance sheet. And so therefore the IMF is happier because now they have less to restructure. I don't understand. This is certainly not how the IMF that I'm aware of works, but apparently, these investors I talked to seem to think, at least some of them seem to think, this was a win-win for the IMF, for Ukraine, and certainly for the bondholders
I guess
to
that is the
rule
underlying
the
logic that the debt is really not sustainable, even as assessed under the DSA, and that this is a way to make it look like it's meets
yes.
the conditions of the DSA and kind of kick the can down the road, a lot, basically allowing IMF funds, at least indirectly, to go into these bondholders' pockets. So
Yes.
that the program can go forward, and everyone can kind of pretend that its conditions have been satisfied. That's a really depressing story, if that's the
Can it
one you're
really
telling.
be like, but now, again, super caveated, the people I talked to didn't know. They were not part of the bondholder group. They're just listening to rumors, and they didn't think that any of the language we discussed. They're like, no, nobody else has the time to read the language in the way in which you guys do. You are entertaining, and we may listen to you once in a while, but you're completely off track. Yeah,
Irrelevant.
you're totally irrelevant. That's not what's going on. What's going on here is that they're gonna strip the guarantee off themselves and then become like the railways, and they're gonna be super flush with cash because like European authorities have been giving electrical subsidies to keep the lights on in Ukraine. And then all that extra money can then be shared with the bondholders. And Ukraine benefits because now it looks like it has less debt. It can meet whatever IMF targets. The IMF benefits because it can run its program. And the bondholders benefit because now, they get a lot of money. This is all great for everybody. I somehow think, no, this is all just really sucks for, it certainly sucks for Ukraine. It ends up paying more.
So these people are all really smart. There's two ways to think of this. One is like the, I don't know if you were ever a South Park fan, but there was that episode where it was like The Sign has three parts. Part one is collect underpants. Part two is a bunch of question marks. And then part three is profit. So like either this is total lunacy, right? Where we're hallucinating some scenario in which these bonds get paid. Or, and I fear this is much more plausible, this is just deeply cynical and depressing that everyone is going to, all of the official players are going to kind of look the other way, let money go into these investors' pockets, even though it, at least in theory, is possible to treat them the same as everyone else, all just to kind of maintain the pretense that the DSA is accurate and a fair assessment and that all of its conditions have been satisfied. That kind of bums me out.
It does. I was very sad when I heard this story, but I mean, I guess, so here's, maybe there's a silver lining version of this that I don't believe. I have to say right away, knowing what I know about the way the Ukrainian government runs stuff, and I my apologies to all the Ukrainians who are going to be like, oh no, we're super efficient. Their government doesn't run stuff that well. It kind of sucks. It's very corrupt. They screw lots of things. So I don't believe that these 100% state-owned companies are being run so well that they're so flush with their own profits that it's better for them to remove the guarantee from the inefficient state. I mean, the state may be inefficient, but it's hard for me to believe that the state-owned companies are being run that well. But let's say I'm totally wrong, and I'm often totally wrong, as we have made clear right from the start, and that we have this one in a billion situation where the state-owned companies are just so brilliantly run. They're making tons of profits, and they have these stupid aggregated collective action clauses that nobody realized were going to backfire because the state-owned company was going to be run so well. In that case, it is justifiable that, you know, that the company just be separated and be allowed to pay its bondholders higher amounts because they're just being run so well. They don't need to restructure, and the shitty state needs to restructure. I mean, did I make that like?
I guess, but that, like, then you could do it just by removing the aggregated collective action clause, and in this case, replacing it with like a pre-2014, you know, non-aggregated CAC. Like that doesn't offer Ukraine itself anything, though. It would leave the guarantee intact, but bring this bond out of the restructuring pool. The fact that Ukraine is in principle getting something out of it, the release of the guarantee, maybe suggests that something a little more nefarious is going on, right?
Well, I'm always convinced there's a lot more nefarious, but I don't think, you know, it is possible. At least one of the people I talked to was like, well, the companies, you know, it's possible that the company's really well run and you're going to separate out the company, and Ukraine could have shit credit, but the company will have great credit. It has all these,
but stripping, you know, the guarantee running should not improve the credit rating of the bond itself, right? Like, I mean, I guess it, stripping the aggregation features might fix that. If you think the possibility of being swept up in a sovereign restructuring is a drag on the credit profile of Ukrinegro, but you can fix that without taking away the guarantee and make the guarantee purely additive, right? So it's all very strange.
It is all very strange.
We have probably confused ourselves and our listeners for long enough, don't you think?
I think this is enough confusion for today, and we had intended to be discussing also our friend Lee Buchheit's incredibly creative proposal, along with the Leap Singh and Ugo Dixon. But because we are so confused about Ukrainergo and this whole thing about the railways and the, you know, NAFTA gas and all sorts of other stuff, we had to spend the entire episode articulating our confusion. So we will do another episode on Lee Buchheit's proposal. And so as not to be as confused, we will try to get some much wiser and knowledgeable guests to help us talk through that one. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, me too.